You're listening to the Wells Tech Podcast, where we talk about technology that can serve the church and its work of spreading the gospel. Wells Tech is a part of the podcast network on Streams, the internet media site sponsored by the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Join the conversation by visiting our podcast website at wellstech.wells.net. Welcome to episode 36 of the Wells Tech Podcast for Wednesday, September 10th, 2008. I'm Martin Spriggs.
And I'm Sally Draper.
And we want to welcome you once again to our weekly conversation about technology and hopefully its potential benefit to your ministry. Good morning, Sally.
Hi, Martin. How was your trip to California last week?
It was great. I was even given the what I call the San Francisco treatment on the day, my last evening there, I got a little earthquake.
Oh, no. I wouldn't know what to do. Were you scared?
No, I didn't know what it was at first. I grew up in San Francisco, just for our listeners. I grew up near Oakland, actually, so I wasn't totally foreign to the concept of earthquakes, but I had an early flight Saturday morning. I could have taken the red eye, but decided to get some sleep. So I was in bed by about 9 o'clock, and a little after nine, you know, it seemed like the bed was shaking. And I thought, what are the supports? You know, loose here? Did I gain more weight than did I eat too well, you know, during the conference, or did the big fat guy in the room next to me run into the wall, or what was it? So I got out of bed and it shimmied for about 5 seconds, and you know, everything seemed to be in order. So I got back in bed and turned on the news, and you know, sure enough, 4.2 earthquake, about
wow.
17 to 18 miles away. So. That was what I call the San Francisco treatment. So that was kind of cool, actually.
Okay.
So other than that, the weather was absolutely fantastic. We in San Francisco. I don't know if many of our listeners have been there, maybe just visiting. But you know, typically the fog rolls in and rolls out, and you get to 60 to 70. It was not over 90 there every day I was there. So it was actually a beautiful experience. The reason I was there was for an Office 2.0 conference. I've been in this position of CTO for about 4 years now, and I hadn't attended a single conference until this summer, and I felt like I was getting a little bit behind the curve as it was relating to technology, and especially technology and ministry. So I said this summer I'm going to try and hit some conferences that I can share, you know, with our congregations and schools. So I picked three conferences. This was the second of the three. The first one I've already talked about here on the show, and that was the Echo Church Media Conference. And as a result, we've developed the Wells Tech Wiki to talk about church media. We'll talk a little bit more about that in the show later on. This one was all about Office 2.0 and essentially using Web 2.0 technologies to potentially, and I'm still a little skeptical, but we'll talk more about this maybe in a later show, doing everything in the cloud, quote unquote, in the cloud, meaning doing all of your office activities, all of your computing, not locally, but on the internet. So, yeah, and there were some interesting, very intriguing panel discussions there that I hopefully can share with our listeners, maybe even next show. Maybe that can be our next show topic, where we're talking about, you know, some of those technologies. And then the third conference I've got coming up in October, which is over in Michigan. Not a great time probably to go to Michigan. Maybe the colors will be out, but internet ministry. So that should be interesting as well.
Very good. Well, we're excited to hear about what you've learned. It's kind of mind-boggling to think about the future. You know, we're just getting used to things the way they are, and our future is going to be that we do everything on the internet, and maybe with voice recognition tied in there, and we'll be kind of approaching Star Trek.
Oh, yeah. There were some great conversations about video conferencing and just office, plain old office computing, you know, in the cloud. So I can share some of those things as we move forward. But interesting stuff. So what are we talking about today, Sally?
Today we're going to organize your life.
That's a pretty high bar that we're setting there. I'm sorry.
Yeah. We all deal with a lot of different content coming at us from a lot of different angles. And I'm sure pastors and teachers feel that wholeheartedly when they open the mailbox and it's full of information from so many different sources, and also you know, that whole aspect of your digital life as well. So not just paper, but digital as well, and how you even begin to attack an organization scheme for all those different segments of your life.
So we've had a show that talked about GTD, getting things done. By the way, at this conference I was at, David Allen, who's the author of Getting Things Done, actually did the keynote, and I had a chance to talk with him a little bit, so I can share some of that part of that conversation too. But we're really not talking about that today. I think what we're really trying to get after is how you find stuff later on. How do you file stuff in such a way that when you want to go back into your system, whatever it is, whether it's a paper system, a digital system, whatever that stuff is that you've filed away, how do you find it again when you need to find it, right? Is that what we're talking about?
Absolutely, Martin. I remember early on in my husband's studies to be a pastor, one of our pastor friends shared with us his library, and he had one wall of bookcases that had a notebook for every single book of the Bible. So he had set up a paper notebook, and every time he did something related to that book of the Bible, he filed it away in the particular notebook tied to that book of the Bible. So I was just kind of overwhelmed by his wall of work, you know. And I think all of our pastors and teachers are continually developing, you know, sermons, Bible class material, lesson plans,
right,
newsletter articles, on and on and on. And they need a good way to be able to easily access those things, put their hands on them in the future without a lot of headache. And, you know, there are some tools that can help them with that.
I suppose the challenge today is we're in kind of a hybrid state where we still have paper. And then we are increasingly creating more and more digital-only content as well. So I think in the life of an average pastor, he's going to go to a conference, for instance, pastor's conference or whatever, and he's going to get papers that are in written form. So he's got that. Obviously, he will have stuff that would be in digital form as well, stuff that he would create or stuff that's sent. Throw on top of that emails, attachments to emails. I mean, the list goes on and on. And teachers are the same way. They're going to have some of that same mixed stuff that they've really just got to figure out a way to organize. And then now we're talking about video and audio files. So it's not just written word. Also photos, right?
Very true. And, you know, I think we can all relate to the fact that it's not how much you know, but how quickly you can put your hands on what you know about. So having a good organization system is going to just improve your abilities as a pastor or teacher or as a layperson, an office worker, whatever it is, to get your jobs done more efficiently, to put your hands on the things that have meaning to you that you need to share with someone else or whatever the case is.
Mm-hmm.
It's just an important skill and something that takes a little bit of thought process behind it to set up a good system to deal with.
Yeah, David Allen's big thing is without whatever system, and I believe this, whatever system you create, it's got to be dumb simple to use.
Mm-hmm.
It can't, the system itself can't be a barrier for you to use the system. So if you create a filing system for paper files that requires you to get out a label maker, pull a new file folder out of a box that's halfway across the room, put all the stuff in, then organize it in such a way that you're going to be able to find it. You're not going to use it. It's not going to go in that organized system. It's just going to sit in a stack on your desk. So maybe with that, let's talk a little bit about paper organization. There are some good resources out there, and we'll put those on our show notes or in our show notes. And one is from the David Allen Company. There's a free article on general reference filing. Just gives little tips. Part of the getting things done methodology is what's called a 43 folders approach, and I use that as well. So here's the quick concept. I don't want to spend a lot of time here because we got a lot of this stuff to go over here in the digital space. But essentially, you create 43 file folders, 31 folders, and guess what those are for, Sally?
The days of the month.
The days of the month. So every, and that accounts for obviously the 31 days and the 4 months that have 31 days. So every day of the month has a folder. So you need to put things in those folders that correspond to activities that are happening on a particular day. And then you have 12 folders that represent the months of the year, essentially. So, you know, with those 43 folders now, you have a system. And as you go through each day, the first thing that you do in a particular day is you open up the file folder for that particular day and see if anything's in there. If there's nothing in there, it goes to the back of the next month. So everything just kind of moves forward through your filing system. And if there's something that you need to address on a particular day or a particular paper you want to read or a certain document that you need for a particular meeting, it goes in that particular folder. Or if it's for the next month, you just put it in the month folder, and then once you reach that month, then you distribute those pieces of content to that to those particular days. So it's pretty logical, pretty simple, and it works. The other thing that we've talked about is just digitize that paper stuff so that you're really not dealing with the paper stuff anymore. And in a previous episode, I think we'll put this in the show notes, I talked about the Fujitsu ScanSnap S510, and it may be upgraded since then, I'm not sure. But essentially it allows you a quick and easy way to make those pieces of paper digitized, and it puts them in a PDF format, and then you can use a digital filing system.
So then we should cross the bridge to our digital lives. I think it's time to go there. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that is making organization for our digital content just dramatically better is a desktop search tool. Mm-hmm. What this allows you to do is just find anything on your computer based on different keywords or dates or that kind of thing. So it's constantly indexing the materials on your computer and allows you to very quickly put your hands on something. Kind of takes all the effort out of organization. If you can find it with a search tool, then you don't need to be worried about where you filed it away or whatever. You just depend on your search tool to get to the digital data. And there's several of these that we can mention.
Mm-hmm. One is Vista. I use Vista. I actually use a couple different computers. One is XP and one is Vista. But this is an invaluable tool that Vista now provides, and you can also get through something called Google Desktop if you're using XP. You can use it on Vista as well, but you don't need to. Most keyboards now, if you're using Windows, have a Windows key. And all I need to do on my system is hit that Windows key, and up pops the Start menu, and it defaults to the search field. So I just start typing my search criteria in. And it goes beyond the old search. We have to tell it where to search and what to search for. You just start typing in anything that you can remember about a particular piece of content, either a file name or even a piece of content from within the file. So if you can remember any series of words or a word that might be unique to a particular file or document or spreadsheet or PowerPoint, it has indexed the contents of those files, too, so it knows where everything is. Google Desktop works in a very similar fashion. These are absolute lifesavers. We've got so much digital content now that it's, even if you have the best referencing system in the world where you're meticulous and almost anal about putting together names of file folders and subfolders and subfolders of subfolders and everything's organized to the nth degree, this tool is really, really helpful because you just can't keep track of all that. And especially for content that you don't reference all that often. So it's something you created 3 years ago and you have no idea where you put that at the time. This will actually search that. It'll search contacts. It'll search email. It brings everything, every digital asset on your system all together. So I think Vista and Microsoft has done an excellent job with this. And Google has done a nice job with their Google Desktop as well.
And I'll just put a plug in for Google Desktop that there is a Mac and Linux version of Google Desktop as well. Mm-hmm. I did some searching, just researching for the show for Mac desktop search tools, and it really all kind of pointed to Google Desktop. So I think that's the main tool that people are using for search.
Yep. With the release of Leopard for the Mac, the Spotlight tool has actually been significantly upgraded, so I would certainly recommend the use of that tool as well. On my system at home, which is an iMac, you just hit Apple space, up pops the Spotlight window. You just type in your query, and it'll typically find what you're looking for. Just as a side note, this is not about organization, but just about productivity. That's how I start all my applications, too. You can hit that Windows key or the Spotlight key on the Mac and just begin typing the name of the application you want to start. So, for instance, on my Vista machine, I just hit the Windows key and type OUT and hit Enter. And so that's five keystrokes, and I've got Outlook open. You could do the same thing for Windows Explorer or Internet Explorer or Word, any of those. And it's smart enough to remember previous searches. So you really don't have to mouse around. You don't have to go to the Start menu and all that other stuff. You can keep your fingers on the keyboard, and that's the most productive way to use your system, is to not go constantly back and forth between your mouse and your keyboard. So those tools work that way as well.
Very nice. Martin, you mentioned something as we were planning for the show that I wasn't familiar with, and that is kind of a way to organize your computer screen or your desktop, it's called. Yep. You know, I'm sure many of us are guilty of having 2,000 icons on our desktop and trying to make sense of all of that. And so there were a couple of tools you were going to share in that realm.
Yep. Not a great organizational strategy, at least in my opinion, is to have, you know, 1,000 icons on your desktop, although I'm sure it just works like a cluttered desk for those people whose minds work like that. They know where everything is. But here is a way to at least lend a little bit of organization to that. A product called 360 Desktop. I think it's 360desktop.com. I'll have to check that. But it essentially gives you a scrolling, what I would call a scrolling desktop. So obviously you're limited by your view of the desktop by your computer monitor. But what this does is it allows you to scroll across, infinitely across your desktop so that it extends it to the right. So you can scroll and scroll and scroll. So you have essentially multiple areas of your desktop that you can work on that you don't always see. So you could have one desktop that's set for communication. So you've got your email or your Outlook, one for web browsing, one for research, one for sermon writing or lesson planning, where you'd have all the tools that are necessary for it on that particular desktop. And you kind of parse things out by activity. So that's 360 Desktop. It does a number of other cool things. So you can do web clippings of certain websites you want to keep track of or keep an eye on, and they'll constantly update. And there's all kinds of widgets that are for you. Can play a lot with it, and there's very cool backgrounds that you can use too if you're into that stuff. On the Mac, there's something similar. It's called Spaces. I believe it limits you to four spaces, but with a simple keyboard command, you can bring up a different desktop for your particular activities. And applications, as they're opened, can be glued to or attached to a particular space. So whenever you open up your word processing program or a web browser or page layout program, you can say always open it in space 2 or space 3 or space 4, and then you can easily tab between all of those spaces depending on your activity, and it clears all the other clutter around, you know, that typically would be on one desktop into four different areas. So there's definitely something for the Mac. Linux also has that too, at least Ubuntu, and I think most of the distributions have a similar kind of concept with a desktop, multiple screens that you can bring up.
So that's something I'm going to have to investigate, because I do have different lives that I try to use the same computer to deal with maybe my school life versus my work life versus my personal life, and having different desktop spaces I think would be a big advantage to keeping me more organized and not so cluttered and everything.
Yep.
One other thing that I want to really kind of wrap my brain around more is tagging.
Yep.
And tagging is a concept probably made most popular with Web 2.0 tools out of it, settings where people tag their blogs so that they fall into different categories. Where I'm seeing the power for organization is the fact that when we do have those different pieces of content, there's different ways that we want to file them. And say we're depending on a paper filing system, we can only put that piece of paper into one particular file, I guess, unless we go and make copies of it to file it in multiple places. But electronically, by using tagging, we can set up a search scheme, basically a way to identify that content in multiple categories. And I guess Windows Vista is good at tagging. That kind of comes along with the Vista system, that when you save a file, you can tag it for searching and that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's limited. In Vista, it's limited to the Office suite and to, I think, JPEG files. You can't tag everything. So its usefulness is somewhat limited. If you're totally an Office user, it works really well. Because then you can do custom searches and do save searches on particular tags. So show me everything that I've written, let's say, for a pastor on the book of Matthew. So you could tag it with Matthew or a particular chapter and verse. So tagging is very sophisticated in the fact that it allows you to quickly grab information, just like it does on the web, any Web 2.0 application or in a blog, those kinds of things. Show me anything related to this particular tag. So it's a, the Mac does the same thing.
Okay. Well, I started out telling the story about a pastor friend of ours who had the wall of notebooks with all of his sermons organized by the books of the Bible and that kind of thing. When my husband finished at the SIM and was ready to start his ministry, we kind of took a look at tagging as a way to save all of his content, but filing it in multiple ways. So as you said, by the book of the Bible would certainly be one way that we'd want to do that, but we'd also maybe want to file it by occasion, so all his funeral sermons were together and all his sermons for weddings were together and that kind of thing. And then as we explored it further, we thought of filing by church year, by the type of content it is, whether it's a newsletter article or Bible study or a sermon, and also just kind of having some free tagging so that we could identify key words that were part of his writing, like if the sermon were on forgiveness or were on trust or were on love, we could have some free tagging to be able to categorize things that way. And what we decided to do was actually archive all of his written content online and use an electronic tagging system that comes along with software to be able to do this organization. I'll include a link in our show notes to his site. It's at christinsight.com, and we've been doing it for a little over a year now. And it's pretty impressive now when you look back and see the organization scheme in place and the fact that you can look up his work in all of these different ways. And because of tagging, have things filed in multiple locations related to the different topics.
Yep. For me, it's definitely a discipline. You have to say, I'm going to do this. And I'm going to do it consistently every time I put a tag on there, because obviously you have to do a little bit of planning and say, this is the tag I'm going to use for this kind of content, or your system gets a little bit muddy and a little less useful. So we could probably devote a whole show to different tagging taxonomies, as it were, to make sure that you're consistent and it's usable. But absolutely, tagging is going to be a way where we can sort through all the stuff and get to stuff that's really important to us by how we identified it when we initially created it. So lots of stuff. Go to this website, wellstech.wells.net, for all of the links that we just talked about, and give us your comments how you are organizing your life and how you're making sense of all this stuff, that continually tends to pile up, within our systems, whether it be paper or digital. Up next, our interview. We had a chance to sit down with Neil Campbell. That name may not sound familiar to you, and did not to me either until I went to the Church Media Conference in Dallas. Neil Campbell is behind the scenes and kind of is behind the camera at geekbrief.tv. Many of you maybe have heard of Callie Lewis. She is the on-screen talent. That happens to be Neil's wife. We thought it would be great to have Neil on and talk to him a little bit about what is behind geekbrief.tv, which is an extremely popular video podcast about technology. And we talked to him a little bit about podcasting, about video podcasting. So let's listen to our conversation with Neil Campbell of geekbrief.tv. Joining us today is Neil Campbell of geekbrief.tv. Welcome, Neil.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Wonderful to have you. I had the pleasure of attending one of your seminars, and I don't know if you do this a lot, but you had a talk with Callie at Echo Conference, or Echo Church Media Conference down in Dallas, Texas, and thought, boy, it would sure be great to get Neil on and talk about some of the things that you talked about there. You spoke specifically on blogging, podcasting, and live streaming, and you are one of the, is it the creators behind geekbrief.tv, or did you come in later?
No, it was just us. There are two of us.
Okay, you and Callie. Okay.
Right. She's my wife, and we were, it was November 30th, 2005. We were wanting to start a show that would be commercially successful, and we were thinking of domain names, and we were just thinking and going through the domain registrar, and we thought of Geek Brief, and from there all the other ideas flowed out from the name. And so
and it's called the Shiny Happy Tech News, right?
Yes.
What's behind that?
Well, we are more interested in making people smile a few minutes every day than providing exclusive news or news they can't get anywhere else. It's mainly news about gadgets, consumer electronics, and what's happening in technology. And that our most important goal is to just make people smile for a few minutes every day. That's more important to us than the actual information we're conveying.
Right. Not a
bad
goal.
They get good information, that's good too.
Yeah.
So how often do you release an episode of Geek Brief?
4 days a week.
Wow.
Oh, wow. That's quite a production schedule.
So how do you come up with topics? Do you just surf? You get inquiries, you get product reviews that come in, those kinds of things? How does that work for you?
Exactly. It's all of those things. We spend at least half a day researching what's going on in tech news and writing this show. We get, now that we've been around long enough, we get good tips from people via email and stuff, and that helps. And then companies are always trying to get our attention.
Absolutely, yeah. What kind of audience do you have then?
The audience, in terms of numbers, is pretty big. We get an average of 300,000 downloads per episode. Every once in a while, we'll hit a million. That's rare, but sometimes it happens.
Mm-hmm.
And what I like more about the audience to talk about is the range of people. We've got hardcore techies that pay attention, and we've got moms and grandmothers and grandfathers who are just casually interested in technology. And I love being able to bridge that gap.
Sounds like you're doing exactly what you love.
Yeah.
So you do a video podcast. Did you start off with audio at all, or did you jump right into video?
Well, we played around with audio, but Steve Jobs had just announced the video iPod in October of 2005, and there wasn't a lot of video content on iTunes, so it was our goal to do video to be, you know, kind of get that first mover advantage.
Mm-hmm. So a lot of our congregations are thinking about audio podcasting as a first step, and Sally and I have been kind of encouraging them to think along those lines. How big a step is it to go from audio to video? I would imagine there's some pretty significant barriers there.
Well, it's a lot more expensive to do video. It's a lot more time-consuming.
And you need somebody that looks good on camera, too, right?
Well, you know, I've noticed this with HD. Normal people look better sometimes than pretty people.
Uh-huh.
Because pretty people, you start seeing all their makeup.
Right.
And so I think if you're doing normal people, go HD, because it looks really cool just to see a real person looking real on the screen.
Maybe there's hope for me, Sally. I thought I always had a face for radio.
No, you just have a face for HD.
Okay, beautiful.
Most of
Very
us do.
Good. So what kind of challenges have you encountered? Has there been anything that's been a major obstacle to you doing your podcasting?
When we started, we had never done anything with camera. I had never owned a camera. Callie had never been on camera. So everything was an obstacle. We didn't expect the audience to show up right away, and they did. We thought we'd have some time to learn what we were doing. But within 3 weeks, we were getting 3,000 downloads per episode. And because it was video, that was a lot of bandwidth. And so our hosting company was, they shut us down.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
A company called Podshow, now Mevio, came to our rescue, and so since then, we've just been growing and growing. And the biggest challenge has been to learn what we're doing, because we didn't start out with a background in video production at all.
What about fun stuff? You know, what's the good side of it? Obviously, you have a lot of audience. You must have a lot of cool contacts through the podcast each day.
Well, the best stuff is getting to meet the people who watch. Whenever we travel, we have meetups in different towns, and just getting to connect with the people who watch, because we don't, I think the thing that differentiates new media from old media is that it's a two-way conversation. We're not just putting out the information like on TV and saying, don't talk to me. We're wanting to hear back from people. And so the best part of about what we do is just meeting people. And we've met some cool people, like I'm sure you guys have heard of Mark Lowry, the guy who wrote, Mary, did you know that your baby boy? One day or one night, he wrote Callie and said, slow down, you're talking too fast. And I was in bed, and she didn't want to wake me up, and so she didn't really sleep that night. And the first thing, as soon as I woke up, she said, Mark Lowry wrote us. He watches Geek Brief. And so because of that, we become friends, and we hang out with him, and it's just really cool.
So you're the guy behind the camera. So you kind of had to figure this stuff out on the fly. You didn't have formal training in communications. You just said, this would be cool, and I'm going to learn how to do this?
Totally. The whole idea of being able to work at home and have an audience that's worldwide just appealed to me. It's why the internet attracted me originally. I used to just, everything that I would write about the internet or think about the internet was all about that potential to hit publish and have it immediately available to the whole world. Mm-hmm. And that was the driving factor in our desire to get into podcasting.
So I'm thinking about our churches trying to get into stuff like this, and it's, you know, to get into it is, you know, for similar reasons that you've mentioned, just the instantaneous communication and just extending your reach far, far greater than the walls of your church. So it sounds like, you know, a lot of our congregations obviously don't have communications experts or people that are good with video or audio, but it sounds like, you know, it wouldn't be that hard for them to kind of pick this up, just like you did, right?
If there's the motivation to do it, the neat thing about podcasting is that there's a community that loves helping other people do what we do. I haven't met a podcaster yet who wouldn't sit down with anybody for an hour or 2 hours and give them advice and show them exactly what to do. It's something that everybody that's in this medium seems to love to do.
Mm-hmm. So if you were to kind of consult with a church and they said, you know, where do we start? There's so many options. There's so many places to be on the internet. There's so many tools to use. We see all these recommendations. You guys even have on your own site some podcasting tips. You know, where would you suggest a church or a school start when if they wanted to, I mean, let's say get into just audio podcasting just to start with?
Well, it's very simple for churches, especially because you already tend to have the gear. You have microphones, you have mixers, and that gives you an advantage that mm-hmm. individuals don't typically have.
Right.
The next step is to find the way that you want to digitize your audio, change it from analog to digital. And there are lots of audio interfaces starting anywhere from $100, and you can go any price you want to pay over that. And basically, you would just plug your mixer into the digital audio interface and then plug the audio interface into the computer. And the audio interface is going to come with its own software for recording. And it's really that simple. Beyond that, you start reading about how to convert that audio to get it ready for publishing on the web. Most kids can make an MP3, and so probably there's a teenager in the church
That's
who
right.
can tell you exactly how to do it.
And who would love to do that.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, like you said, it's more about passion than anything else. And I would totally agree. The ability to figure out how to do stuff just by, you know, doing a Google search and, you know, participating in some of these online communities, you probably have better tech support than certainly we had 5 years ago or that we've ever had.
Totally. I remember when we were starting, before we started our show, we spent 3 months just trying to understand what an RSS feed is. And now you don't even have to know. There are so many ways to do it. You don't really have to be familiar with the tech behind making it work at all.
Right. Yeah, that kind of resonated, too, when I read your description on the website, which I'm sure you know what it says. It says, Neil is an eccentric dork who depends on Kali for tech support day after day after day. And you're the one running all the gear, right?
I run it until I break it, and then she fixes it.
Ah, okay. So it's good to have backup, right?
Yeah.
So what about this big trip that I'm reading about on your website? What's that all about?
Well, one of the neat things about doing our show is that as we've grown, we've gotten access to more exciting stuff. When we started, we were just going to the gadget blogs and doing shows about what we found there. But the show growing has given us access to a lot of really cool people who are doing really amazing things. And we want to go see it and capture it on HD, because you can get videos on YouTube of a lot of this stuff, but it's really low quality, and we want to see this stuff because it's going to change our lives in the future, and we want to capture it on HD and share it with everybody.
Mm-hmm. So you're traveling around the country, is that right? Going to all 50 states, I read.
That's the goal.
Very cool.
We're looking for the bus or whatever kind of vehicle. We're going to actually live in the bus, work in the bus for probably a couple of years, and so we've been searching, and it's hard to buy a bus, but it's a good time to buy a bus because nobody wants one because of gas prices. And so we've been shopping and learning. There's a lot to learn because they're so complicated with all the electricity, and you want it to be efficient so that you're not wasting energy, and so there's a lot to learn. We've been doing tons of research.
Yeah, there's probably some social network out there that'll teach you how to drive a bus, too.
I think so.
So you were at the Echo Conference presenting technology to a ministry audience, to a Christian audience. What was that like? Do you normally do that? Or is that something just brand new for you?
We've never done that.
Is that right?
Yeah, we've presented to secular audiences. That was the first time we've talked to a Christian audience. And we've talked to Christians individually and pastors and advised people one-on-one. And it's really interesting. We have an amazing, unbelievable number of pastors who watch Geek Brief. Mm-hmm. And Callie gets email from them. And it's such an unusual demographic that's surprising to us. But because of that, we've talked to pastors individually. But that was our first time to talk to a group.
So were the questions different? Was it a kind of a different atmosphere? Or was it the same? Just, we're still talking tech. We still need to make it work.
It was, I think the difference in the questions come from the fact that there was a familiarity with gear, because churches already work with mixing boards and microphones. So there's that distinction. People know that part of everything. Mm-hmm. And so I think that was the big difference.
Okay. Well, I would assume that a lot of people that you talk to are thinking about jumping into this and maybe making a living at it, or at least a semi-living, and that's probably different than the audience that you spoke to at Echo Conference.
Yes. A lot of people want to do what we're doing and quit their day jobs and do this full-time. And so we talked to a lot of people who want to do that. And so that's also a big difference, I think, between individuals and ministry. Ministry is, it's just about communication. I think the motivations are, it's more like every church needs to be doing this.
Right.
No, I think that we really appreciate Neil just kind of sharing. It's really cool to get somebody that's out there and doing this for such a wide audience and successful at it and not intimidated by the technology of getting it done, but instead, kind of taking advantage of the technology. That's very exciting to hear.
I think that's huge. Go ahead, Neil.
I hope everybody who has the slightest desire to do this for their church, that they just try it. Because I think it'll make a difference for the congregation. And especially what I love about the potential is in a congregation, people move away, and this gives them a way to stay connected to that body that they were so much a part of.
Well, even a lot of our congregations today are very decentralized. There's, you know, you don't have the neighborhood churches anymore. There are people living from towns all around, and this technology allows people to get closer together, even if it's in a virtual way. So, well, thanks so much for your work. Thanks for the time it took to share some thoughts with us. And we are going to continue to watch geekbrief.tv, and I'm sure many of our listeners already do. So keep up the great work.
Thanks, guys.
Yep. Thanks, Neil, for taking the time.
So, Martin, Neil is not short on enthusiasm for the work they do.
And that's what he probably needs. That's his life.
Exactly. As we talked to him, I realized we must have missed the boat on starting a video cast back in 2005, because they got in on the ground floor of that, and they have a really successful show. It's really exciting to see what they're doing there, and really how easy it is to get into that space and the possibilities for ministry that exists there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's probably a reason that we're not on video. At least I'm not on video, Sally, and it more has to do with I don't look as good as Callie does. So she's probably doing what she's very good at. So we really appreciate Neil coming on and sharing some things. I know he has a very busy schedule, but kind of neat to talk with somebody who's taken that to such a large level and has such a large viewership. Very cool for him to come and talk with us.
Absolutely.
Up next, our picks of the week. Sally, you've got a pick?
I do. Today I want to talk a little bit about Jing, and you can find Jing at jingproject.com. We've talked about Jing one other time on the show. It was actually one of our listener picks back in April when we ran the listener contest. Someone pointed us that direction, and over time I've had a chance to work with it, and now I think I get it a little bit better than I did back then. But a good starting point is to visit their website and check out their video tour. They have kind of a cool little short video that you can watch that gets you started with Jing.
What's the website again?
Jingproject.com. Yeah. And it's a product of a company called TechSmith, and I'm a huge TechSmith fan. They put out various audio and video resources that are just really, really intuitive, easy to use. Works on a Windows or Mac machine, and it allows you to capture images from your screen, and you can annotate those images, add arrows and things like that. So really easy way to take a picture of what you're seeing on your screen, and you can use those pictures in various ways. You know, you can send someone a link to something that you're looking at so they can see it the same way that you are. Alternatively, you can record video. Very quick and easy way to record video from your screen, up to 5 minutes long. And it's all free. As you record images or video, you publish them to a free account on a site called screencast.com. And Screencast allows you to then embed your images or video into whatever it is that you want to share. I can see lots of uses for congregations and schools, capturing office processes. Like in our church, we have offering counters, so we can capture that process of entering the offering into the software. Taking visitors on a tour of your website. I even mm-hmm. recorded a short little tour of our Wells Tech website that I can include in the show notes, so you can see cool. an example of a Jing video.
Yep.
And just teaching online, you know, lots of ways that your students can interact with you to do that. So I encourage you to check it out. It's at jingproject.com.
Yeah, it really just simplifies the screen sharing or screen recording process. I think they've really taken it down from a 10-step process to a 3-step process, especially if you use screencast.com, which I think is a super tool.
Mm-hmm.
And price?
Well, it's free. That's the good news. It's a totally free model. You get 2 gigs of storage on Screencast, which is a lot of space.
Yep.
And just a great tool to use.
Okay. Very good. Sally, my pick is along the lines of productivity and capturing information so that you can find it again. And it's a tool called Evernote, E-V-E-R-N-O-T-E, and it's evernote.com. Some of our listeners, I'm sure, are familiar with OneNote. That's the Microsoft product that comes with the Office suite. You may not even know that you have it. Most Office suites come with it. But essentially, it is a note-taking piece of software taken to like the 10th level as far as Evernote's concerned, because it captures everything as well. So just to give you an example of particular uses, so you're on a website and you've got information that, hey, you'd like to save. So typically for reference or to read later or to share, however you want to do it. So typically in that case, Sally, we would normally make a favorite or a bookmark, right? What
right.
This allows you to do is just highlight it, the content that you want, and then click through a keyboard shortcut, send it over to Evernote, and it makes it into its own individual note. Totally searchable again, because a bookmark obviously is not searchable, or favorite is not searchable, or its content at least. So now you've got it captured in your system. We talk about these trusted systems. So you've got this in the Evernote system. And one of the great things about the Evernote system is that it can exist wherever you exist. So there's a desktop version. There's an online version. There is a mobile phone version, all of which point to the same content. So it syncs across all those devices. So if you wanted to reference something from work at home or from home at work, this would be a great system to use, which is a little bit different than OneNote, because OneNote is really limited to your system, a singular system. So it works on Windows, it works on Mac, works on, like I said, mobile phone, the iPhone. It does character recognition. So if you take a photo and you plug it into your Evernote, you clip it into your an Evernote note, it will actually do OCR or recognition on that picture. If there are any words in the picture, let's say you hold up a business card and you take a picture of that with your mobile phone, it'll actually scan that so that when you type in the person's name or email address or whatever, it'll find that particular picture even. Very cool. And it does it extremely well. So you can clip content from documents, web pages. You can actually type your own free text into a note and then sync it all up. Best part about it, it's free. So
I love the price.
Yep. It's in beta now still, I believe. But it's a very polished product. It's been around for a long time. I prefer it over OneNote because of the syncing capabilities. So it works really well. It's fast. The search is really quick. You can add tags so that you can categorize your content. You can create individual notebooks. Very cool product. So give it a try. Evernote. Doesn't cost you anything to try it, and I think you'll be hooked if you do. So,
I think we have a Star Trek theme going today, Martin, because I just am dumbfounded when you say that it'll take a photo and read the text that's part of that. That's just amazing technology to me.
Yep, absolutely. All right, up next, our Wells.net feature of the week.
Well, today I want to show off a little bit from our Wells Kingdom Worker site, which is actually an affiliate site of Wells.net. Mm-hmm. And I want to point our listeners to the Mission Information Center. You can get to it at wells.net/jump/WKW-MIC. And I'll make sure and include a link to that in our show notes. What you can do at the Mission Information Center is request mission kits for your church or school event. At Wells Kingdom Workers, they've gathered together mission materials, so things like money and clothing and just all kinds of cool stuff that you can display in your school or church as you're celebrating a mission festival or researching about a particular mission field. I went out to the site and did a search on Brazil, for example, and it came up with a bulletin board kit that you can basically check out of the library that's maintained at Wells Kingdom Worker, and it has fact sheets, it has maps, it has history, photos, statistics, little art pieces and things from Brazil, and they'll ship it to you, and you just return it when you're done working with it and everything. There is a suggested donation to cover the shipping fees, and it's all handled online. When you go there and find something you want, you fill out your information in an online form, and they send it to you, and you send it back to them once you're done with your mission festival or whatever it is. So just a wonderful resource, basically a library of mission materials that make your mission festival a lot more meaningful, to have actual items to display from the mission fields.
Yeah, absolutely. Visuals really help kind of bring that to life, that this is a real thing. This is not just a line item or something that you note on your check. This is something that that we're doing together. Very, very special thing. Mm-hmm. Community feedback. Anybody talking to us this week, Sally?
Yes, actually, I had a couple of things I wanted to share. You mentioned earlier in the show that our last week's show focused on church media and the fact that we set up a Wells Tech wiki. That's at wellstech.wetpaint.com. Mm-hmm. And last week we invited our listeners to go out and add their own experiences related to church media. And we did have several new wiki members.
Great.
I think there were 8 in total last time I checked.
That's
not
a start.
We're counting. But yeah, it was exciting to see some of our listeners out there. And what was also exciting is the fact that wikis are driven by the contributors. So yep. If people have needs, they're able to share them out there, even if they're outside the scope of church media, which was kind of our focus, what we were looking for people to contribute to. But we heard from people in a lot of different areas as well. People looking for calendar software. Rob Freeburn posted something about a new wiki that he had started, a Wells Social wiki, so there's links to that out there. So it's a start for us.
I have high hopes for this. This is such an important, in my mind, an important effort that we're doing here to allow the collective knowledge that exists within the Wells, certainly within our listenership, to come together and to share. And that's the power of things like Wikipedia as well. That's why it has become really a decent source for content, is because there are so many users that care about the content. Again, when we're talking about church media, there are a lot of congregations looking for ideas, looking for information, looking for help with church media. And I know that there are listeners who have some expertise there. If you know anything about microphones and what works well for your congregation, go to the wiki and add an entry for the particular system that you use, or if it's a soundboard or a particular projector that you're happy with, or a projector that you're not happy with, saying, hey, this looked good on the surface, it was cheap, but boy, it didn't work for us. That's helpful information. So we need you to go to the wiki and add that kind of information. And it's just plain simple to do. You just need to get a login and you hit the edit button and you type. I think every one of our listeners can do that. If they can download this podcast, they can edit a wiki.
Absolutely. So we look forward to hearing from more of you, and we'll make sure and keep everyone up to date as there are entries on the wiki.
Awesome.
We also heard from one of our listeners, John Shoesmith. We've heard from John before, and he's doing some really cool stuff out there at Redeemer in Yakima, Washington. This time, John was looking for a lead on some bumper-type music, just intro and outro-type music to use in podcasting. Mm-hmm. And I was able to point John to soundsnap.com, which is a cool website I found, which has royalty-free sound clips. And they have everything from animal sounds to doors closing to a applause, but they also have over 14,000 music entries. Mm-hmm. So little 10-second snippets of music that you can integrate into a podcast. I think John was looking to podcast some of their Bible classes, and he just wanted a short music intro. So if you're looking to do the same thing, you can go to soundsnap.com, and we'll have a link to that in our show notes.
Thanks, Sally. Keep those comments coming. Wellstech.wells.net is a site to go to. You can add a comment to an episode. You can send us an email from there. You can join the listserv and listen in on the conversation of Wells Tech types talking about technology topics. Great place to get your questions answered, or for you to answer questions. So take a look at that site. And we've reached again the end of hopefully a useful show for our listeners. We like to keep them coming back and give all kinds of dimensions to all kinds of different ministry type topics as they relate to technology. Hopefully we've done that once again. We do appreciate you coming and listening to us each week, and tell your friends. Hopefully there's something there for them as well. Let's close, as we always do, with the music of a featured Wells artist. This week we are back to the music of Kevin Lersch. He is going to sing for us Children of the Heavenly Father and Jesus Loves Me from his album Abide With Me. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll talk to you next week.
Yeah.